AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. Two workers, one a Bay Area Rapid Transit employee, the other a contractor, were struck and killed by a BART train as they were inspecting a section of track yesterday. The train itself was on automatic control overseen by a non-union employee. Paul Overseer, the assistant general manager for the transit system, says any labor issues with striking workers pales when it comes to the deaths.
We're dealing with a situation here where the labor issues, the negotiations are not in the forefront of our mind. We've just lost two people in the BART family.
The strike, which began on Friday, came about because of an impasse over changes in work rules wanted by BART management. White House says less than a half million people have been able to at least fill out applications on both the federal and state health care websites since enrollment began. AP Radio Sandy Kozel.
Administration officials say more than 476,000 health insurance applications have been filed through federal and state exchanges. But they still refuse to say how many people have actually enrolled in the insurance markets. So it's unclear whether the program is on track to reach the 7 million people projected by the Congressional Budget Office to gain coverage during the six-month sign-up period. Sandy Kozel, Washington.
President Obama, described as being frustrated with the federal website, is expected to address the issue at a White House event tomorrow. Hillary Clinton steps back into politics, stumping for former Democratic Party Chairman Terry McAuliffe, who's running for governor of Virginia. She says people around the country are watching the race.
Watching to see whether the voters of Virginia lead the way of turning from divisive politics, getting back to common sense and common ground.
Polls show McAuliffe with a lead over Republican Ken Cuccinelli. This is AP Radio News. Israel says Iran has to be pressured even harder. Mark Levy with more.
Israel's leader isn't impressed with the optimistic views from the just-concluded multi-power talks with Iran over its nuclear program. Benjamin Netanyahu tells his cabinet, as long as there are only words and not action, international pressure must continue. Netanyahu says sanctions against Iran must be stepped up, not eased. Israel insists Iran is still trying to make nuclear weapons. Mark Levy, Tel Aviv.
The Boston Red Sox are in the World Series. Shane Victorino's grand slam, bottom of the seventh, giving Boston 5-2 win over Detroit, clinching the American League championship.
I was definitely excited when I ran around the bases. The pounding of my chest. I don't like, when teams show that kind of emotions, but I hope they understand it was a special moment.
Boston hosts St. Louis, game one of the World Series, starting Wednesday night. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
Signs, so subtle we may not notice them. Signs like loss of interest in activities. Signs like insomnia, fatigue, or withdrawing from friends.
Hey, dear, come play cards with us.
Even talking about wanting to die. These are signs of depression.
Hi, my name is Smitty. My husband, Congressman Jerry Connolly, and I urge you to take signs of depression seriously. Let your loved one know you care. Then seek help from a doctor or mental health professional.
Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Hey, Mom. Why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
You can help families overcome the challenges of autism. The Virginia Institute of Autism, or VIA, a nonprofit school and outpatient program, is looking for passionate professionals to provide a range of applied behavior, analytic assessment, and clinical services for children with autism spectrum disorders and related developmental disabilities within an hour radius of Charlottesville, Virginia. Potential BCBA supervisors, behavior technicians, and instructors should visit viaschool.org or call 434-923-8252.
Hi, everybody. It's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show. Tune in next Sunday and every Sunday at 11 right here on 1500 and 820 a.m. to hear the latest from the food and wine scene. We've got celebrity chefs, sommeliers, winemakers, and more all here to tell you about the inside skinny that you won't find anywhere else. That's Foodie and the Beast this Sunday at 11.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce, and this is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-host, Colin Callahan. Today's show is brought to you by the Potomac Companies, helping companies keep the control of their future health care cost low. We have a great lineup of guests on our show today, including Steve Sisler, who's the owner and CEO of Sisler Stone, Christopher Moody, the president of Moody Insurance Worldwide, Zarina Jess Huff, who is the CEO of Value Options Maryland, and finally, Ann Harkins, the Executive Director of National Crime Prevention Council. First up is Steve Sisler with Sisler Stone. What is Sisler Stone, Steve?
We are a landscape masonry supply company in Falls Church, family-owned. We've been in the area for close to 80 years, the family has. We've been in business 76 years. So
give us an example of what you guys do, actually.
We sell masonry supplies, landscaping products. Landscaping contractors, some homeowners, basically more contractors. We send the contractors send the homeowners in to look at displays and materials and stuff, but majority of our sales are to contractors.
So you've been around for 75 years.
76 years. Now.
76 years.
Yep.
Tell us about the beginning.
The beginning of the company. My grandfather came down from Harrisonburg, Virginia, out of the Shenandoah Valley. Our original business was headstones and monuments back before World War II. Mm-hmm. They would do the whole thing lock, stock, and barrel. They get the big 8-10 ton pieces of granite, split them, polish them, all that good stuff, in the whole nine yards. After World War II, or actually during World War II, the quarry started doing a lot of this stuff. And my grandfather was quite an entrepreneur, I've been told. He passed away in like 1948, but that wasn't good enough for him. He actually had a lumber mill at our office back when they were building Fairfax City. So they actually cut all the bed slats and tool handles for Montgomery Ward's in this area for about 5 or 6 years. And they started getting into more of the quarry stuff. And
so your grandfather unfortunately passed young.
Yes.
And then who took over the business?
It was mostly my, well, us all brothers. There was 11 or 12 kids on my dad's side of the family. Mostly the boys took over, the sons. My dad was he's right in the middle age-wise. And he is... Fortunately, the last one left. My uncle, who was the former president, passed away about 2 months ago, 3 months ago.
Sorry to hear
and,
that.
And my dad just turned 87.
When did you begin in the business, Steve?
Believe it or not, about 10 years old.
10 years old.
So in a few months, that'd be 35 years ago.
Oh, my God. So what's a 10-year-old doing in a stone business?
Well, back in the day, we would pay cash on a weekly basis. My mom was the bookkeeper and did all the payroll and stuff. We were a lot smaller company back then. So you can imagine the labor force we had back in the day. If you paid a few hundred dollars cash on a Friday, you know what they're doing on Friday night. They wouldn't show up to work on Saturday, so my dad would. I would get a phone call frequently on Saturday mornings to tell me to get up and get to work. So this working the weekends like that on Saturdays, working summer times after that, and I say I started at the very bottom sweeping whatever it took. I did.
Did you have brothers and sisters helping in the business too?
I had two. I got two half brothers and a half sister. My one half brother was in and out of the company some. The other one, my brother Donnie, he worked there about 20 years, retired about 4 years ago and moved to North Carolina.
So all the kids were in on Saturday?
No, actually, no. Well, my brother. Just you, huh? Well, my brother was actually he's old. I'm the youngest of the three. He's probably about 15 years older than I am, maybe 20 years older, and he was doing other stuff. He was delivering or whatever else. You know, it's a family business. You got to do what you need to do to get the job done.
Right.
And you stayed involved in the family business all along?
Yes, I've worked. Like I said, I've worked there some shape, form, or fashion since I've been 10 years old.
Why? I mean, some people would say, man, I've been schlepping stone, that's enough, I'm going to do something else.
Well, I came up and did everything. I've started out, like I said, sweeping the floors, loading people's cars, cutting stone, and just worked my way up, mostly by necessity. Someone wouldn't show up to work, someone would quit, someone would get fired, so, you know,
Did it ever occur to you to do something else, or was this kind of it? You were going to do this?
I always thought about being a firefighter. I'm a volunteer firefighter in Falls Church, like my dad was before. That crossed my mind, but once I got old enough, I'm too deep
in the family business
to do that.
So are you more like your mom or your dad in business?
I think kind of both. My mom was the more the money person. She did all the payroll, watched the, you know, what's the old saying? If you watch your pennies, the dollars kind of take care of themselves. And my dad, like I said, I just learned a lot from him, from how to do things. Like I said, my father's not even a high school graduate. Most of the family wasn't, recession or depression time. Being a good person, that goes a long way in business.
Did you work a lot with your aunts and uncles, cousins?
My uncles I worked quite a bit with. Like I said, they were a lot of more. My dad was one of the middle kids, but one of the younger of the brothers. So a lot of my uncles were actually going out of the company when I was coming up. But I did work for them.
Who is the most influential for you in terms of how you run the business now?
Oddly enough, my mom, I think. I think, like I said, it's my dad was more the hands-on stuff on the yard, and my mom was more watching the office and stuff like that.
So you were working so hard, you didn't find time to go to college. Where did you learn how to do the business part of the business? Where did you learn how to lead?
I think leading is just from being part of the family. Someone's got to step up.
Someone has to step up, but that's a whole different thing than stepping up and leading. I mean, give me your definition of leadership.
Oh, boy. It's hard. It's like being a leader. You gotta be up front. You know, I don't ask my employees to do anything I won't do.
So it's modeling a certain kind of behavior?
To me, it is. It's not going to school and being a business person. I mean, in general, getting a business degree is kind of you kind of walk on eggshells once in a while like that. But it's you know.
What's the toughest decision you've ever had to make, Steve?
Firing somebody. That's I'm generally a good guy. I don't like being tough and rough and stuff like that. But firing someone's tough, especially in the past history. We've actually hired some former contractors who've actually been friends of the family and stuff like that, and trying to let them go.
That's
some of the tough, you know, especially if you're personally involved and know their family and know them. It's very tough. Yeah.
So the business has been around long enough to see several economic cycles, including the one we've just been through. Mm-hmm. What's it been like to lead a company through that?
Very fulfilling. The knowing that we had to cut back some. We didn't really cut any employees. We just cut some hours. And we came out the other side golden. Like I said, we're back to this year probably to some of their best financial years we've had in probably 20 years.
Yeah.
So it's a great thing. It makes you may want to beat in your chest like I you know, it's.
How long have you actually been in the CEO role?
This is, I think, year 6 or 7.
Mm-hmm. And you said you were kind of quasi in it before that.
Yeah, my cousin was CEO or – actually, back then we had like a general manager slot. Yeah. We kind of reformatted some things.
So when you were handed the reins, what was the most surprising when they said, okay, you're in charge? What surprised you most?
I won't say so much surprised me. What took a lot of focus was dealing with people one-on-one. Before, I think he kind of did a lot of that or most of that, but now it's kind of falling back on me. The other aspects I've been doing, I was doing for so long, a couple years before that, it wasn't really a big transition.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
What do you enjoy most about running the business today?
It's the day-to-day interaction with people.
You keep saying that it's about the people.
It's your businesses is people buying off of people from
right.
people. That's all it is. That's
right.
I think that's how we stay in business so long. Is we're a down to earth company. We're a small company compared to some of your other guests you're going to have. But that's people buy from people.
Yeah. Talk about legacy for a second. Mm-hmm. Where do you want this company to be remembered for? Where do you see it 5 years from now? Tell us about legacy.
The legacies, that's the cool part about it. We've been around so long, I think we already have a legacy.
Yeah.
Most people who lived around here know about Sizzlers, either the family or the company or both. We try to, like you said, I just hope that we go down in history of like being a good, solid company that helps the community out. We're big in the community, helping the community out. And just trying to keep the Sizzler name up top.
Fair enough. What's the website address?
It is sizzlersstone.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Steve Sizzler, who's the CEO of Sizzler Stone. I'd like to thank my co-host, Colin Callahan. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, this is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your business spotlight. Joining us today is Bob Dingell, who is the managing director of Pierce Capital Partners. What is Pierce Capital Partners, Bob?
Well, Peter, it's a small boutique M&A firm for all practical purposes. We focus on working with small companies, mostly IT government contractors, and prepare them for kind of a mid-market acquisition. In other words, these are small companies that have decided for whatever reason it's time to either merge with someone else or sell.
What makes you guys so unique in your space?
Well, we spend a lot of time working with the companies to maximize value. We go overboard because many times it's similar to selling a house. You don't decide on a Friday you're going to put your house on the market on Monday. So we spend time with these founders and owners to get maximum value for their companies.
And what do you like most about this position?
Well, I've been there and done that, so I can relate one-on-one experiences to these founders and owners.
So you just help an entrepreneur who's worked really hard get their business to a stage, and then they exit, right?
They exit. And, many entrepreneurs, keep in mind, take companies to a certain stage, and that's what they like doing. They don't want to manage it and grow it into the mega millions.
Thank you. How can someone reach you?
Oh, easily by either going to our website, which is PierceCapitalPartners.com, or directly. We have a cell number there, or office number 571-934-6131.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Bob Dingell, who's the managing director of Pierce Capital Partners. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and that was your business spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-host, Colin Callahan. And for this segment, we have Christopher Moody, who's the president of a company called Moody Insurance Worldwide. What is Moody Insurance Worldwide, Christopher?
Moody Insurance Worldwide is an independent insurance broker. We're based in Germantown, Maryland, and work with clients in the metro D.C. area and across the United States and outside the United States.
How long has the company been around?
Company's been around for more than 50 years, and I've been involved with the company for about 12 years.
And how big or small in terms of
size? We have 35
size?
Employees, and we have close to $50 million in written premiums.
Yeah, and how long did you say you were involved? Been involved?
It's 12, coming up on 13 years.
And how long have you been the president?
Been the president for 5 years.
Why did you want to be in the business? I understand this was your father's business, right?
It was, and originally as a young man who was studying business. I didn't think I'd end up going into insurance. I think as I got older, as a younger man, I didn't understand exactly what the business was about, even though my dad was in it. And as I got older, learned more of what this industry can provide to people and the way it helps them and protects businesses and employees, and found that it was a great way to be able to get involved with leaders and helping them to protect themselves.
So for you, it's less about the product or the selling of the insurance, and it's more about the establishing of a relationship with a business owner and guiding them through their business in a helpful way?
Yeah, I'd say so. The relationship is more important, and insurance is a great way to certainly build those relationships, but insurance becomes an integral part of risk management planning, looking to the future. And so our relationships, I think compared to many, tend to be more consultative.
Right.
We get questions that often are not related to insurance directly, but indirectly, and really enjoy helping.
So you've in fact become a trusted advisor to a business owner through your insurance relationship. Is that right?
Yes. When people ask who should be calling you, it's people who view insurance or people who want to have someone who would see their insurance broker as a trusted advisor or a partner, as opposed to a vendor. We're going to spend more time getting into the nitty-gritty details and doing some customization. So,
and I get the impression that is very meaningful and purposeful for you to have that kind of relationship with your customers. Is that right?
Yes.
When did that become important to you?
I think it became important to me when I was, relationships generally, when I was younger. My mom was a great example of that. She, all my friends wanted to come to my house because my mom, they love my mom. Hey, Chris, it's good to see you. Where's your mom? Let me talk to her. But I realized how a relationship could be so impactful on someone. And I think often people are, you know, when they look at insurance, they'll think about it in a way of, oh, it's something I have to do. And when someone comes and engages them and is really trying to help them work through this, they find value in that.
And then you told us in the green room about another time in your life that was pretty influential on you, and was this campus. Tell us about that.
Yeah, when I was a young person, I was involved in something called Campus Life, and it was a parachurch organization that reached out to high school students. And there were people within that organization, who adults, who saw the potential that was inside of me and embraced me and helped draw that out and then give me the opportunity to take some of the potential that I had interacting with peers and to help them to grow and to lead and that type of
so
thing.
So for you, it was not only being validated as a person, but then being able to have impact on others?
Yeah, I think part of how I became validated was having a vision that our lives could be spent in being a part of other people's lives. And so our lives aren't just about us. Our lives are about those people that are in our who share our lives with us.
So you're a man of strong faith?
Faith is very important and impacts, I think faith should be a part of every part of a person. You know, it's not just something that it's personal. It's a part of my business, part of my family.
Does it ever conflict with running a good business?
I don't believe it conflicts. I think there can be times where in relationships people might view it as a conflict. But
how has it helped you run a good business?
It's a guiding light to me when there are difficult decisions or difficult circumstances that arise, it gives me something to go to look at how would I respond to this circumstance. I think my faith and it's a worldview. It's a way of looking at the world, a lens through which you look. Mm-hmm. And I found it to be something that when I don't know what to do, the best answers are often there, though sometimes they're hard. And that the answers often preserve relationship even through difficult times. And so long term, what I found is my faith has helped me make strategy and follow things in a way where the end outcome is much better than I would have done on my own in the spur of the moment.
Where are you from?
I'm originally from D.C. I was born in D.C. and grew up in Maryland.
Uh-huh. What was life like as a kid?
I was a shy, quiet kid. And
brothers and sisters?
I have two younger sisters. Uh-huh. One is 12 years younger, so much younger. She was a surprise to our family, a pleasant surprise.
What do you remember most, looking back on it, about your childhood that kind of shaped who you are today?
Before junior high school, it was my relationship with my mom, and I had a difficult elementary school years relationally. I think that Had some difficult things happen with other people in school. And then about the time I started going to campus life, my parents, that's when they found that, that's when faith became important to them. And, they started going to church. And that's when I began to be exposed. And my life really turned at that point from being a quiet, shy, introverted kid to someone who found life, really. And I saw a great change at that point in my dad, and my relationship with my dad really grew at that point.
Mm-hmm. Other than your parents, talk about some significant role models or influences along the way.
Sure. There have been several that have been very influential. The one I mentioned from campus life was a woman named Karen Rexroth, and she had the ability to see in me things I didn't know were there and to draw them out. And once she drew them out, then give me an opportunity to do something with it in someone else's life.
What's it like to be actually seen by another person and made to feel great? What's that like?
It's life-giving.
Yeah.
I think is the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
And when you find that, the way that she did it, it also, once you found it, turned to and now do the same for other people.
Exactly.
And it made it meaningful to do that and brought satisfaction in life to be able to do that.
So is mentoring a part of your role as president of the company?
I'd like it to be. I don't think I always do it perfectly. I think that the tyranny of the urgent and the time constraints draw me away from doing it, but it's something I would like to do more. It's something that I do outside of work. And mm-hmm. I look for those opportunities, not only in my own children, but in other young people.
Well, you've grown a nice little organization here. You're sitting across from somebody you're interviewing. How do you know you have somebody you want to hire?
I think what I look for in people is the ability to relate with people and a desire to do the right thing and a desire to have what they do benefit other people, that mm-hmm. they're... Certainly we have to take care of ourselves and our families and that type of thing, but there needs to be a desire to better other people. If you have that and those relationship skills, you can learn the business part.
How do you know you have someone across the table from you that has relationship skills?
I try to ask them about experiences outside of business. I think business is very easy to put on who I want to be. Mm-hmm. You begin to get in conversations with people about things outside of work and what do they value? What do they do? You can get a better glimpse into who they really are.
You mentioned in the green room you have an interest in what's going on in Africa. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Right out of college, I went and lived in East Africa for a period of time. And since that time have stayed connected with that part of the world through someone who mentored me, who I lived with while I was there. And a number of our clients now are people who are in the relief and development community. And so they're not only in Africa, but in a number of developing areas. And so I've stayed connected there. I travel there regularly. Mm-hmm. I'm partnering with some projects that are over there that are doing community development. And I don't go over there to help them as much as we share a relationship. And there's mutual sharing and learning that takes place.
What would you say the toughest thing you've ever accomplished is, Chris?
The toughest thing I've ever accomplished? I think one of the toughest is in leading people, so often what you want to do in reacting to circumstances is immediate, is a negative response when difficult things arise. And the toughest thing is to constantly put down those types of responses and to look at how can I serve someone and not just react to them. Even when maybe they're wrong, still to say, I don't have to be right. And
yeah.
I run into that. I think I don't run into it any more than anyone else, but as I get older, I'm more aware of how I respond wrongly and learning to not.
Great. And real quickly, how about your proudest moment up till now?
Proudest moment. You know, I think I look at my kids right now, and I'll credit my wife in this, but I'm very pleased with where they are. You know, the vet things that I value, I see that they can value too. And even my oldest is 14, and at 14, I still already see him having a vision for taking what he's good at and doing something with it that will impact other people. And I hope that when he's an adult, I can look back and
great,
and that will be how his life is lived.
What's the website address for the insurance company?
It's www.moodyinsurance.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Christopher Moody, who's the president of Moody Insurance Worldwide. I'd like to thank Colin Callahan for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
Are you really confident you've assembled the strongest team to work with you on your business? For example, an attorney who has successfully handled your type of problem, an accountant who sees the big picture, a business advisor who gets it, a real estate broker who really knows the market, a commercial insurance broker who really has access to all the different insurance products, an employee benefits guru who really helps mitigate future costs, a wealth manager who works with you to make work optional, an understandable information technology wizard, a commercial banker with minimal covenants, an investment banker who believes business is a relationship, not a transaction, a staffing specialist who can really help you build the team, even a confidential peer group with whom to compare notes. Listen to executiveleadersradio.com, that's executiveleadersradio.com, to confidently select a business leader who serves business leaders to help you. Because nobody's interviewed more business leaders from Princeton through Northern Virginia than Executive Leaders Radio. So you'll have confidence in your choice of a business leader to help you in your business, in your ultimate selection of this business leader. This business leader can include your attorney, an accountant, a business advisor, a real estate professional, a commercial insurance agent, an employee benefits specialist, a wealth manager, an information technology guru, a commercial banker, an investment banker, a staffing specialist, a collection agency, even a CEO club. Save yourself grief, time, and money. Listen to executiveleadersradio.com. That's executiveleadersradio.com. So you can listen and learn from the most highly respected professionals. executiveleadersradio.com.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-host, Colin Callahan. And for this segment, we have a young lady by the name of Zarina Jess Huff, who's the CEO of a company called Value Options Maryland. What is Value Options Maryland, Zarina?
Well, we are a health and wellness company. We manage 32 million lives across the United States. We're most known for our behavioral health products, although we do other wellness initiatives. We are very proud of our provider network, which is about 135,000 providers, and we service public sector contracts as well as commercial contracts.
What is behavioral health?
So behavioral health for us and the work that I do is public sector work, where we manage Medicare and Medicaid behavioral health benefits on behalf of the state.
Behavioral health as in mental health?
Yes, mental health.
Uh-huh. And you run the Maryland piece of all
this?
I do,
yes.
How big or small is that entity?
So we have 1.5 million lives. We've got a penetration rate of about 17%. And so we're working with those individuals who have Medicaid or Medicare benefits, as well as the uninsured population.
And you've been the CEO for a grand total of how many months?
6 months. Yeah, short amount of time.
So how's it going?
It's going pretty good. I think that just getting my feet wet and understanding the Maryland market. I'm coming from Texas, so it's a little bit of a different change given that it's a blue state. And they actually have benefits there. So it's been interesting.
Why are you the perfect choice to run this organization at this point in time?
I think it's because I've got the ability to create relationships. And the thing I like about Maryland is it's very much a relationship state. And interacting with various stakeholders, provider representatives, member representatives, interacting with them gives me the understanding of what the system needs, and I can best speak to that.
Why is relationships so important in business?
I think it gets you where you want to go. I mean, essentially.
How young were you when you first realized that?
The importance of relationships in business.
Relationship, or just
I think the importance of relationships in general from the moment I started talking. it could give me what I wanted if I said I want milk.
So tell, where are you from?
I am from originally Destin, Florida, which is a little beach town.
Uh-huh. You tell us a great story about your father or your grandfather.
Yeah. I'm first generation Filipino American. And my grandfather, our family comes from a little province in the Philippines called Dagami Leyte. And my grandfather was a water buffalo herder. And he had 14 kids, and he came down off the side of the mountain 63 years ago to search for a better way of life for his children, and he believed that was pursuing education. And so he went into the city with his children, because that's where most of the educational facilities were. And here we are 63 years later, and I am the first person in my family to have both a master's and a doctorate. So,
did you get to know your grandfather?
I did. I actually lived with him for 8 years.
What was that experience like? What do you remember most about that guy?
Just that he was so wise. I mean, it was interesting to me that whenever he spoke, everybody shut up, because you knew whatever he was going to lay down was going to just be total pearl of wisdom. So,
real patriarch.
Yeah. Did he come to the United States too?
Yes, and he actually was the oldest person to be sworn in as an American citizen back in, I think it was 92, in Pensacola, Florida.
And he did that to help his family.
Yeah, he did that to help his family. I remember he had to surrender his Filipino passport, and it was the only time I ever saw him cry.
What was that transition like?
His transition into American life?
Yeah.
I think difficult, especially for him relating to us, because we were raised in the West, not the East. And so we have a very individualistic culture here, whereas there everything's interrelational. When you do things, you do it for the benefit of the family. It's very different here. Mm-hmm. So I think there was some tension. Sometimes he didn't understand us or the way we sort of conceptualize things. But the thing about my grandfather is, in his wisdom, the one thing he always knew to do and the one thing he would always tell me to do is shut up and listen. And he was good about doing that with me. Mm-hmm.
Why healthcare?
Well, I think it's probably the most pressing topic of our time right now. We've got a lot of problems with it here in America. But for me, I think of mental health care, and that's because, again, it's a pressing topic. It's a great need.
Well, you also said, though, as a first-generation immigrant, you saw some things that aren't entirely present.
Right, social justice type issues, yeah.
Say more about that.
Just kind of experiencing, you know, the socioeconomic differences of what it's like to come here from another country and not to have that sort of financial stability, to see the doors that are open to you and not. Also, I think when you do immigrate, there's the challenges that exist with it open up doors for mental health disorders like clinical depression.
Right.
So I saw a lot of that and wanted to be able to help it.
So not everybody goes in the direction you did. You could have been kind of jaded by that experience and gotten bitter. You did not.
No.
Why not?
I mean, with anything in my life, I've had a lot of things happen to me, especially here within the last year. It's all about having a heart filled with gratitude. When you have a heart filled with gratitude, you don't have room for anything else. So,
when did you first realize you had a heart full of gratitude?
When I survived ovarian cancer last year, this time last year when I was pronounced cancer-free.
So that's been a big change recently.
Oh, heck yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wasn't living right up until then. I mean, if you can have a 2.5-pound tumor sitting in you for months and not even know it because you're too busy catching flights and attending meetings, there's a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't even know what kind of ice cream your daughter likes because you never see her, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You went to college?
I did.
What'd you major in?
I majored in communications broadcasting.
How did you find yourself in healthcare?
Well, I looked at the paycheck, my very first paycheck, and I realized that if I died, Sally Mae would wake me up because I owed them so much money. And I said to myself, I have to get a job that pays money. So I decided, you know, because, you know, totally healthcare pays money, right? Not really. Not in my field. So I went into that because I thought it was important to make a difference, to work with people, to help with some of these social justice issues, help the system along.
What do you want to accomplish in the role as CEO of this organization?
Well, I joked earlier that one of the things I'd like to do is obviously win the Maryland contract. I mean, that's important to us. We believe we're providing a superior product. We want to continue to do so. But the legacy of what I'd like to do is just make access to care affordable, quality care affordable for everybody. That's important for me.
And what's the adjustment been like running a company? What surprised you most the day you became CEO?
How many people need you when they finally have confidence in your ability to do things, and sort of juggling that time? It's been somewhat difficult.
Other than your parents and your grandfather, what other significant influences, role models have been important to you?
Probably a counselor that I worked with when I was younger. His name was Joe Skelly. Every time I go back to see him, he looks more and more like Freud. And he and I made decisions about, you know, we worked together when I was younger, and he and I made decisions about where I would go to school. He's my very first mentor. But he was somebody who He used to say to me, you're not a sheep, you're an eagle, and you're flying in the sky, and you just have to learn to embrace that, because I was different than most kids. And so he really took, I think, the strengths in me, my vocalness, and he helped me channel that in a way that would benefit me.
What were some of the things that showed up as different as a child?
My energy level was very different, but I didn't have ADD. They tested me. My energy level, my vocalness, and my need to be heard.
Mm-hmm. How many brothers and sisters do you have?
One brother, one sister.
Uh-huh. And you are the
youngest. I'm the baby. Yeah.
Tell us about your need to be heard. What's that about?
You know, I think I probably popped out of the womb saying, look at me, listen to me. I think it's just who I am. I feel like I have important things to say and I want people to hear them.
Uh-huh.
I like to be watched. So
you talk about, you know, you're very young in the role.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the challenges is being a woman in the role, but in a very curious way. Tell us about that.
About the glass ceiling part of it?
Well, that other women aren't so embracing of your
success. No, they're not. I mean, I never thought in a million years I'd get to where I was at and I'd hit a glass ceiling and it would be one that was placed down for me by my own gender. Mm-hmm. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that men operate on a ladder type system in leadership and women in life operate on a lattice system. And when they're thrown into that sort of male-dominated culture, I think it throws them out of whack. And so,
so that's an interesting thing, that women lead differently than men. Is that right?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your leadership style.
I think my leadership style is very male-oriented. I'm very aggressive in my approach. I'm very straightforward, matter-of-fact. And I think that can be off-putting to people who go about leadership from a different angle. Mm-hmm. So those experiences that were difficult for me were actually incredible learning opportunities, because there's all different ways to go about leadership. And you can learn from those people.
What do you want your legacy to be, your personal legacy?
Somebody who greatly appreciated and embraced education and the opportunities that America provided. You know, being a first-generation immigrant, we are afforded so many opportunities here. And when you pass up the ability to get a student loan or to get a scholarship, I mean, you've wasted an incredible opportunity.
What's the toughest thing you've ever accomplished, Zarina?
Battling cancer.
How has it changed you?
I have a greater respect for life.
Yeah. How about your proudest moment so far?
I think what would be my proudest moment? Having a kid that's well-adjusted when she looks up at me and says, I love you, Mommy, and those are my proudest moments. Yeah.
If I was interviewing your grandfather, what would he say about you?
The same thing my dad would say. We fully expected her to be where she's at today.
What else, Colin?
So what's your greatest piece of advice to the young person who's listening on the radio now?
Don't be afraid to reach out and build relationships, particularly with people who are above you. That's if you want to get to where I'm at and you want to do it in the amount of time I've done it, that's mm-hmm. the only way to go about it, is by building relationships. Yeah.
So what would you say to a first-generation immigrant who's listening in and just got their teeth kicked in a disappointment?
Don't give up. Continue to pursue your goal and reach out to people that can help you achieve that. We're going to have setbacks in life. It's part of life. But just keep pressing forward.
Great. What's the website address?
For
Value Options Maryland.
www.valueoptions.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Zarina Jess Huff, who's the CEO of Value Options Maryland. I'd like to thank my co-host Colin Callahan for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, for more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment, right after this business spotlight. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your business spotlight. Joining us for this is Isabella Fuentes, who's the marketing director for an organization called BusinessWise CPA. What is BusinessWise CPA, Isabella?
BusinessWise CPA provides outsourced CFO services, financial consulting, and M&A advisory to government contractors, small businesses, and nonprofits in the D.C. area.
What makes your company special?
What sets us apart from our competitors is that we're not just another accounting firm with temporary staffing where we send out folks we've seen once and you never hear from them again. Each one of our teammates are dedicated to one client where they can come back and forth anytime they have financial questions.
And what's the role that you play for the firm?
I'm the marketing director. I began actually doing graphic design and brand development for our firm. I developed our website, our logo, and from then and on, I've done business development.
What do you like most about your company?
I like the most that we're able to really listen to our clients. As I was mentioning before, we're not a temporary relationship with our clients. It's very much ongoing. Although we're outsourced CFOs, they consider us their business partners. We're in on their executive meetings explaining how they can improve cash flow, how they can stay within their budget, and as well as look to us in the growth of their company.
Great. How can someone get a hold of BusinessWise CPA?
You can either give us a call at 301-960-5830 or check out our website at www.businesswisecpa.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Isabella Fuentes, the Marketing Director for BusinessWise CPA. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage, and that's your Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-host, Colin Callahan. And this segment, we have Ann Harkins, who's the Executive Director of the National Crime Prevention Council. Tell us a little bit about the National Crime Prevention Council, Ann.
The National Crime Prevention Council, or NCPC, is the home of McGruff the Crime Dog. Our mission is to help people keep themselves, their families, and their communities safe from crime.
How old is this organization?
The organization is 30 years old. 31 years old next month. And McGruff is 33.
And how big or small in terms of size is the organization?
Well, we're about 20 or 25 people in the organization, but we have a network nationwide of crime prevention practitioners and law enforcement officers who make it their mission to help keep their communities
safe. So your reach is nationwide and pretty extensive.
Yes.
Why was the council actually founded?
The National Crime Prevention Council was created, if you go back to the late 1970s, crime was on the rise across the country. And at that time, if you asked people what they could do to keep themselves safe, the answer was, I can't do anything. That's law enforcement's job. Hard to believe today when 75% of Americans know that there are things they can do to keep themselves safe. But we were started because the Justice Department, the Ad Council, some private philanthropists, and crime prevention practitioners came together and said, we need to engage the public in this fight against crime.
So the primary purpose of the organization is what?
Is to engage the public in the fight against crime.
Awareness-raising campaigns.
Awareness-raising, preventing crime, actions they can take, civic engagement. And we work on every crime from reminding people to use lights, locks, and alarms to keep their personal property and their home safe, to high-tech crimes, intellectual property theft, mortgage fraud, cyberbullying, bullying. So we really work with every demographic and every crime.
How long have you been the executive director?
Since 2009, so just over 4 years.
How's it going?
It's going great. Thank you.
Why'd you want the job?
It's a challenge, and I've always believed in common sense programs like crime prevention that save our government and individual communities money. And it was just a great opportunity.
And you've kind of been involved in the law one way or the other for a long time. Is that right?
That's correct. I have spent most of my career at the intersection of law, policy, and politics.
Well, give us an example of a couple of things you've done along the way.
Well, I worked on Capitol Hill for many years on the Senate Judiciary Committee, so I have worked on judicial nominations, executive branch nominations, crime bills, antitrust legislation, First Amendment protections. I had a great time and opportunity to work for Senator Leahy, who when I started was a junior member of the Judiciary Committee and is now the president pro tem and chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. But I had a great opportunity to work on the Judiciary Committee on a wide range of legal issues. And then I went to the Justice Department, where again I worked on a wide range of legal issues, from appropriations to nominations to national security issues.
Has the law always been important to you, or justice? What is it about this that fascinates you, that you'd give a whole career to it?
Well, law is the basis of our society, and justice makes our society work better. My dad was a federal law enforcement official, and I grew up in a household where we talked politics all the time and history, and so it's just sort of in the DNA, I think.
So it's been interesting forever.
Yes.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up just outside of Philadelphia.
Uh-huh. And how many brothers and sisters?
I have two younger brothers.
Uh-huh. So you were the older sister.
Yes.
Managing things. How young were you when you first had to step up and manage things?
Well, I don't know that I was managing things, but my dad had a very serious heart attack when I was four, and I think that had a big impact on our family and probably on my role in our family.
Yeah, how did that affect you as a four-year-old?
Well, it was mostly surprising, and I don't have a lot of memories of it, but I do know that both of my parents had as a top value education. Mm-hmm. So I can't remember not hearing education was the most important thing in our upbringing, but I think it underscored the reminder of the need for education, and for me as the only girl, that something could happen to the breadwinner, and the girl needed to be educated too. I think that was a big part of it.
Yeah, fascinating. Are you more like your mom or your dad?
I'm really a combination.
Uh-huh.
I have, I hope, my dad's sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom was a salt of the earth, but not a touchy-feely person.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope I have the ability she had to quietly help other people.
Mm-hmm. So now you're leading an organization.
Yes.
Is that the first time you've ever led an organization? Into this role?
No, not really. I mean, I had similar roles in other organizations, but it's certainly the first time I've ever had the title president of an organization.
What's different about running an organization?
Well, you're on all the time. You're responsible for a group of people, and you're responsible for their paychecks, and that is an important responsibility.
Yeah. So you've got a big month. We're in the middle of a big month, apparently, right?
This is Crime Prevention Month, where we particularly encourage people to get engaged in their communities. And we have four themes this year. They are protecting your personal property, staying safe in a high-tech world, school safety and security, and safety in the golden years. So those are the themes that we're emphasizing this October with the help of two private foundations, FINRA Education Fund, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority Education Fund, has supported our Crime Prevention Month kit, which we've got 100,000 copies going around the country even as we speak to law enforcement and crime prevention practitioners. And then the Wireless Foundation at CTIA has also supported our programs by creating a hard kit that will help us help communities build crime prevention programs.
Tell us about the importance of partnership with the private sector.
It's critical. I mean, we are an organization that was founded by the Justice Department, but as we all know, budgets are dwindling, and it's been hard times for nonprofits across the country for the last 5 or 6 years. So the opportunity to build corporate partnerships and work with foundations like FINRA and the Wireless Foundation helps support programs that benefit communities.
Is there a story or a couple of stories that you like to tell about the effectiveness of your organization where you've actually helped somebody in a community?
There are many stories, and the people, really, we stand in the shoes of people across the country, whether they're in a United Way or a police department or sheriff's office or a crime prevention office across the country. Those are the people who are on the ground where the rubber meets the road, maybe on a $40,000 or $50,000 annual budget, who are getting these materials out, who are doing home safety assessments, who are going into schools and helping kids learn how not to bully and how to treat one another with respect. We represent those people.
Where do you want the organization to be in 5 years?
I would like us to have more public-private partnerships and more corporate sponsorships and the ability to be creative and continue to find new programs. When we started, public service advertising was radio and television. Today, it's Twitter and Facebook and specific programs designed for particular communities.
Other than your mom and dad, who were some of the most important influences in your life?
There are many. I have been blessed with friends. I went to college here in Washington at Catholic University, and I still have friends from college who have been enormous supporters. And so, you know, I have had the benefit of working with many wonderful public servants, Patrick Leahy, Janet Reno, Al Lenhart, who is currently our U.S. ambassador to Tanzania. But it's my personal friends who have really most influenced my life.
How would you characterize your leadership style?
Mixed up. I have, in this job in particular, but I think it's also a trait, the ability to see the big picture and get down into the detail at the same time, or at least consecutively. And I think that, particularly in an organization that has faced difficult times, one has to be able to do that.
And the difficult time that you guys have faced as a nonprofit is raising money?
Raising money and the reduction of federal grant funds in the crime prevention and the justice area in general.
Mm-hmm. How do you go about bringing a corporate sponsor in?
Well,
what do they have to know about you that gets them excited?
Well, first of all, they know about McGruff. And secondly, they know that we work with law enforcement across the country. And I have never met a law enforcement officer on the beat, a prosecutor, or an attorney general who wouldn't rather prevent a crime than have to investigate and prosecute a crime or spend the money on incarceration. So we all know that crime prevention saves money, and that is a huge part of this work.
So you've had this really great career. What's your proudest moment?
Gosh. I think among my proudest moments would be after the anthrax scare in 2001, when we brought the Hart building back. 50% of the Senate were out of their offices, which really has constitutional implications. And in 3.5 months, we were able to put together an incident command team that served the country extraordinarily well. And that building is back, and people are in it, and they're working every day.
And you played a key role in that.
I was Deputy Sergeant at Arms in the Senate at that time, yes.
Mm. What's the website address, Anne?
www.ncpc.org, NCPC for National Crime Prevention Council.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Anne Harkins, who's the Executive Director for the National Crime Prevention Council. I'd like to thank Colin Callahan, who helped me with the show today. We've had a terrific lineup of guests, including Steve Sisler, who is the president and CEO of Sisler's Stone, Christopher Moody, the president of Moody Insurance Worldwide, Zarina Jess Huff, who is the CEO of Value Options Maryland, and finally, Ann Harkins, the executive director of the National Crime Prevention Council. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. I'd like to thank you, our listening audience, for without you, we wouldn't have a radio show. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
You can help families overcome the challenges of autism. The Virginia Institute of Autism, or VIA, a nonprofit school and outpatient program, is looking for passionate professionals to provide a range of applied behavior, analytic assessment, and clinical services for children with autism spectrum disorders and related developmental disabilities within an hour radius of Charlottesville, Virginia. Potential BCBA supervisors, behavior technicians, and instructors should visit viaschool.org or call 434-923-8252.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individuals.